In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
From Postcard from the Past and Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is the podcast where we scrutinise old picture postcards, front and back. But we're not looking for serial numbers and printers' names. We're trying to understand what it was that caused my guests to hold on to these ephemeral cardboard oblongs. As I say, each time we welcome two guests, and it's their postcards that act as little handheld prompts to send us scuttling towards memories, mysteries, and stories. I'm Tom Jackson, and I'm delighted to say that today my guests are writer and broadcaster Bob Fisher and media consultant and author Rachel Chadwick. Rachel and Bob, welcome to Podcast from the Past.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Rachel Chadwick is the author of 60 Postcards, a book adapted from her blog and her project that had the same name. This was a project she was inspired to carry out after her mother's death, and it's built around postcards. I'm not going to explain it for Rachel, that's her job, and we're going to hear a bit more about that later on, I hope. Now, alongside Rachel's other writing projects, she works as a media and communications consultant. Rachel comes to us today bearing a BH12 postmark.
Yeah, that's right.
What's that? Where does that take us?
Well, I'm down in Bournemouth and Poole area in Dorset, so not far from the seaside, but also very close to the countryside. So I feel like it's best of all the worlds down here.
And is this where you come from?
It is. So I was born in Poole Hospital, grew up down here, and after university and living here for a bit, I moved to London for 13 years. And I think lockdown was the time where I had a think about where I wanted to be. And I came back to where I'm from. So, yes.
I suspect that's a bit of a model and a pattern we've seen across the country, actually. People sort of finding they have, for whatever reason, shifting back away from towns.
Absolutely. I think, yes, many of my friends did the same, moved out of London. And I realised it's 2 hours on the train, so it's not far. But just having the fresh air and the seaside on the doorstep, I think that really kind of drew me back. So, yes, it's fantastic to be back here.
Very good. And Rachel, do you still send postcards?
I do. And I think actually the past year, more than I have done in years, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I really...
Tell me more.
Well, I mean, I will tell you about my project to do with postcards, which was back in 2012. And I think since then, it was like, for me, it revived my love for them after sending them, you know, from places when I went on holiday. But then I think just this past year, finding just unique and different, I say unique and different, we always used to do this, but actually sending postcards to friends to check in and say hello. And I went back to the handwritten note, and I just really enjoyed keeping in touch with people that way, especially after endless Zoom calls. I think it was just really, really lovely thing to get back into.
Yeah. So did you have a stack of cards that you could draw on during this year, or did you make furtive trips out in lockdown to buy them?
Well, I have got stashes of postcards
okay.
that I've kind of gathered over the years. And also, it's quite often a gift for me now. I often find when it's a birthday or Christmas, I always get a pack of New Yorker postcards or
Ah, yes.
Yeah, Penguin postcards or random
Oh, then you've
postcards.
Got 100 to get through.
I've got so many here. So
you're not sending them because you care for these people. You're sending them because you've got to get rid of them all.
That is also true. I can't deny it. But I just enjoy it a lot. But I think for me, and this is something that we'll touch on a bit, for me, I think the front of the postcards are so important and so interesting, but also the words have fascinated me, and postcards I've stumbled across over the years, the messages behind them, how open they are. There's no envelope, so they're really a public message. I would love to speak to some post people about what they've read over the years or seen. But I think it's just such a fantastic way of communicating, and I hope we keep doing it for years to come.
Yes, well, I think we'll talk later about your project, because stumbling across was a key part of that, really, I think, wasn't it?
Yes.
The chance nature of things.
Absolutely, yeah.
Good, all right, we'll come to that shortly. Now, Bob, you may know Bob Fisher from his radio work over many years when he used to present a show at BBC Tees, or from his book, Whiffle Lever to Full, or from his writing in the Fortean Times, or articles in Electronic Sound magazine. And you may even know him from the show Summer Winos, his tribute to the television show Last of the Summer Wine. Now, I just have to ask you, Bob, is this still happening, or have you thought better of it?
No, why would you think better about such a noble project? Yeah, this is me and my friend, Drew, or Andrew T. Smith, as he is professionally. He's very rarely professional when he's with me. And this is the pair of us discussing our lifelong adoration of Last of the Summer Wine and our quest to watch it all together and review every episode in turn. So, we did it at the Edinburgh Fringe in 2018. We toured it nationally in 2019. We were absolutely intending to do it again in 2020, but obviously things got the better of us. But the plan is absolutely to take it back out on the road again as soon as we're able. It's about our fandom of the show. It's about why we love the show so much. It's about what Last of the Summer Wine can tell us about British social history. In fact, you know, rather like Postcards from the Past. You know, when a sitcom runs for 37 years, then you're going to learn something from it about the time in which it was produced. And that
so
kind
it,
of fascinates
it lives in
us
the world
well.
For 30 years.
Yeah, completely. You know, when you watch the earliest episodes of Last of the Summer Wine, they absolutely reflect a Britain of 1973, 74, 75. You know, it's kind of grimy and it's post-industrial and it's bleak. And you know, the conversations veer onto topics that certainly wouldn't make it into a sitcom in 2021. So it's been a fascinating journey.
Wow. And I suppose, although, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a huge fan of that show.
Okay.
But
it's not compulsory.
No, thank goodness. Thank goodness.
Although I will attempt to convert you, obviously.
I'm not worried about vaccination passports, but when they make Last of the Summer Wine compulsory, that's when we're in trouble.
After all the hours I've put in, I demand a Last of the Summer Wine passport. I want a stamp somewhere.
But am I right in saying this is shot in Holmfirth, the programme?
Yes, absolutely.
Now, you will know the postcard connections with that town, because that's
where indeed
Bamforth, the great postcard publisher, were founded in Holmfirth, and in fact they started out as, and this is a bit of a tedious thing to go on about, but they started out making magic lantern slides in that town, and there's a studio, and so they had skillful photographers and a cast of actors who could act out little scenes, and then as postcards took off in the they really took off in a big way at the turn of the century, they started producing postcards. So they were one of the major postcard producers of this country, based in Holmfirth.
And didn't the postcards veer towards the Saucy? Was that their trademark?
Later on, that publisher became one of the main Saucy postcard producers. Yes, absolutely. And as a result, like a lot of people making Saucy postcards, ended up in court from time to time.
Oh, did they? Right, OK. They were that saucy, that level of sauce.
Well, I think maybe the standards were different.
There's a curious scene. It's in a 1970 7, I think, episode of Last of the Summer Wine. And the main characters go on holiday in Scarborough, and there's a scene where it's Compo, Clegg and Foggy are flicking through a rack of saucy postcards on location in Scarborough. But obviously it's got that lovely connection because those postcards would almost certainly have been produced in Holmfirth where they're normally filming. So we wondered if that was a kind of cheeky little, a little nod to the programme's filming locations.
I think it would have to be. I think it would have to be.
They would have known about it, wouldn't they, I think? It would have been in somebody's head.
Bob, you come to us today with a TS-15 postmark?
Yes,
got that right?
I absolutely, you have. TS-15 is Yarm, and it's a small town. It's about 10 miles from Middlesbrough, a medieval town with a lovely cobbled high street, and it's where I've always lived. My family moved here in 1976, and we did up an old house, and apart from 3 years at university in Lancaster in the 1990s, I have never lived anywhere else.
Very good, very good. Bob, when did you last send a postcard?
It's within the last 6 months. I've been thinking about this because I knew you would ask it. I've got a curious feeling. The last postcard I sent was to a celebrity. I can chuck in some showbiz here if you like.
Hello. Excellent.
What I tend to do with postcards, I buy postcards of Yarm. From the shops in the high street. And like Rachel, I have a stash of these things. I've always got, you know, a dozen of them stacked up on the mantelpiece, ready to use. And I kind of send them out as thank yous to people. So if somebody has done something nice for me, I will sometimes, or, you know, if I'm posting something to somebody, I'll just write out a little Yarm postcard and put that in. And last year I did a really nice interview with Dave and Tony Arthur, who both worked on Play School and Play Away in the
1970s. Yes, I remember Tony Arthur well, yes.
Absolutely. Well, I interviewed Dave and Tony because before Play School, they were just a brilliant folk music duo. Yeah. Wrote a feature about one of their extraordinary albums, and that was for the Fortean Times. And to say thank you, Tony actually sent up a couple of jars of her homemade marmalade, which was a triumph. So I think I wrote her a little postcard back just to say thank you.
Very good. Oh, this is the way you should be treating your showbiz chums. Marmalade and postcards. Come on, this is very civilised.
Exactly. I feel a bit bad I didn't send a postcard to Dave now. Maybe I should do that.
Yeah, well, but Dave didn't send you the marmalade, so...
That is true. That is very true.
It's his loss, isn't it? Before we see and hear the cards that Bob and Rachel have prepared already, I'll give you a quick one of mine. This is a postcard from the past card, like I do on Twitter or in my book. So it's an old card from which I've selected just a bit of the message. So let's have a look at this one. This is... now, actually, because we're not sitting opposite each other in the studio, we've all got these sort of dope sheets where I printed all the pictures out so we can all see the cards that each of us have, despite the fact that we're sort of scattered across the UK.
So this is a picture. Turn to page 7 in your textbook.
Exactly. This is a picture of Harlech Castle. And it really looks like a castle from a children's book, actually. The sky is just sort of flecked with little cotton wool clouds. And the castle itself looks as though it might have been made out of those rather expensive composite bricks you could get in the 1930s for children. It doesn't look real. Anyway, the message I thought was intriguing. It's sent in August 1977. We visited Harlech today. This is someone called B. They don't give more of a name of that. And they're sending it to some people in London, in West London. And they say, we visited Harlech today. Weather is still wet. And Penny took the guides to Pwetley yesterday evening to see Saturday Night Fever with John Travolta. And then in brackets, what rubbish! Even the guides thought so. And it's a well-known film. So I just thought that. I love that little bit on the end. And it's a well-known... It's like... if ever you go to see anything that's rubbish, you can just say, well, and it's a well... I mean, well-known doesn't mean good, so there's no correlation there, but...
I can kind of... do you know what? I think that might be a slightly inappropriate film to take a load of guides to see. I'm assuming they're quite young.
That.
It's quite a hard-hitting... It's like... I think at the time it was marketed as, oh, it's John Travolta in a cool disco film.
Yes.
But I didn't see it until a few years ago. It's quite hard-hitting, isn't it? It's quite gritty.
I think it was an 18 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe they had to sneak. I hope that if the guys were in uniform, there's no way they'd have got in.
I can just imagine poor Brown Owl's jaw dropping throughout that film. I mean, like, to reach out with both arms to cover the eyes of all the girl guides either side of her.
And doesn't someone fall off the Brooklyn Bridge at the very beginning? It's just awful. It's a really good film.
Yes. Yeah, it is a terrific film.
It's not. Yeah.
It's brutal.
Anyway. Even the guides thought it was rubbish. So. There you go. I'll do another quick one of those. This is this one I think actually has been rather cut off on your scan, I'm afraid. It's of Bleak House in Broadstairs in Kent. It's a rather gothic-looking house that I know has... I think it does have Charles Dickens connections. Did he live there? I'm not sure. Anyway, it's a Valentine's card. I mean, the publisher called Valentine's. And it's sent to Huntingdon. And it's from someone called Ivy. And it says, having a restful holiday with plenty of sunshine, Broadstairs has some very interesting places. So sorry to have forgotten your surname.
I love that.
So, I mean, you know, it's a fair point to make if you don't. It's still nice that they sent it, but it just feels a bit, I don't know, feels a little bit like they could have made the effort.
I know, it's a curious thing to send a postcard to somebody whose surname you don't know. That doesn't quite equate with me. I kind of send postcards to people that I know.
Know and love, yes.
Yeah.
But I think it's probably, because I have spent some time considering this, I think it's probably a neighbour.
Maybe.
So they know them enough to send them a card, and they know their address because they're just down the road.
Yes.
But they don't actually know their surname. But I don't know.
Frankly, at number 12. Yes.
They should have Googled it in 13th of July 1967.
Oh, I love the honesty in that. I love it. I don't know your name, but, you know, hope you're well.
And also, you're still getting the card.
Yeah.
So if you're going to gripe about that, then that's your problem.
Precisely.
I wouldn't have drawn attention to it myself, I don't think.
Just done a squiggle.
Absolutely, yes. Just gone with the first name, like it was a familiar, friendly thing. We don't need surnames. We're that close.
Yeah, or just dear Mr. and Mrs.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Oh, could you not read it? I'm so sorry, I got nudged.
It must have got wet. It must have got rained on at some point on the journey over.
Yeah, I do see a lot of cards where people say, sorry about the writing, I am, and they kind of say, sitting on the bus, it's resting on my knee, or someone keeps punching me, or just sort of, people have lots of excuses for poor handwriting.
I'm on holiday and I'm drunk.
Yes, I've had 17 pints. Sorry about that. Well, I should remind everyone at home, images of all these cards, including... Bleak House in Broadstairs and Harlech Castle, and all the ones we're going to see during the programme are going to be on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see what they're like and tell that we're not making it up. Now, Bob and Rachel, you've been kind enough to dig stuff out for us. You've done your homework. Rachel, let's start with you. Now, the first card is really one that kicks us into the whole story of your well-known association with postcards.
Yes, so the first postcard of mine is part of a bigger project. I did a few spare, and this is one that I've kept hold of for that reason.
I'm glad you did. I'm glad.
I'm glad I did too. I'm now wondering if maybe I only left 50 postcards and I had a few spare, but when I tell you about why, I'm like, did I count right?
Don't tell the publishers.
Don't tell the publishers, but I left around 60 postcards. So 60 postcards. So this takes me back to 2012, February. My mum passed away from bowel cancer. It was pretty swift. She was unwell over Christmas, had a colonoscopy in January. Can never say that word. Colonoscopy, yes. And sadly was diagnosed with bowel cancer and died 16 days later. So it was all a huge shock, my poor mum. And I think even in 2012, it seems like forever ago, but also like it was last year, really. But
sure.
For me, dealing with the grief of that situation, I had no idea how to do anything. And within a month, I had, you know, gone home, she'd passed away, had the funeral, and I was back at work, you know, and it was just all such a whirlwind. I think I did, you know, the very British thing. I put on a face, I carried on. I said, everything's fine, I'm okay, I'm going to keep going.
And because what else do you do?
Yeah, what do you do? Well, now, of course, it's very different. But back then, I did a bit of research online, how can I read about what I'm going through? And I got to the point where I really had just pushed it completely to the side and also felt like I'd completely stopped talking about my mum. And I'd really had bottled that all in, and I was just desperate to keep talking about her. But of course, you don't want to burden other people with this, even though, of course, they wouldn't mind, but you don't want to, you know, to share about it too much and make other people feel uncomfortable. So that just over the summer, I was struggling, and I was thinking, right, it's coming up to her 60th birthday. These big milestones are often difficult in the run up. The anxiety was building, and I thought, I really, really want to do something very special to mark her birthday and to remember her. And I think that got me thinking. I spoke to my two sisters, and we were talking about, you know, all the fond memories of the holidays. We went to Cornwall every year when I was growing up. We went to France a couple of times, but really Cornwall was our place. And I used to get, you know, go to Mevagissey and get postcards from there, and we used to send them back. And I think that really just got me thinking about postcards. And I thought, well, I can't send a postcard home to mum when I go anywhere anymore. So I thought, how about I reverse the protocol of the postcard and actually write postcards about her to leave them for people to find? So my mum had given me Eurostar vouchers before she passed away for the last birthday. And I would have gone with her had she been here, but I went with a group of friends, and I decided to really make this a celebratory weekend. And I wrote these postcards and scattered them all around the city. I popped them into, I felt like I was doing something wrong, but also, you know, it felt a bit cheeky, but I was.
There's something semi-illicit about it, I think, definitely.
Yeah, it did feel like that. Secretive, yeah, I was leaving them in postcard racks, so people must have been like, what's going on? I'm trying to buy a postcard and it's already written.
I don't want this one.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? Sometimes it's funny because I was trying to leave them in, you know, cafes and places, and occasionally you'd get someone who would chase after me and give it back to me, and I'd be like, oh, no, that was the point was I was going to leave it. Oh, you found one. I see. But it really became quite a magical experience that weekend of scattering her memory around and using these postcards, and I invited people, actually, when they found one, to get in touch with me. So really, that's what then launched the big project, because I did start hearing from people after that weekend. So
the ripples started to happen.
It did. And I couldn't believe it. people were, yeah, reaching out, and from kind of all corners of the world, you know, a group of students from America who were there and found it together. A ballet dancer from New York found it in the Shakespeare & Co. bookshop. And it just became, I felt like I'd stepped into a film. And with this, I felt I was able to use the magic of the postcards to be able to talk more openly about mum without it, you know, having that tinge of sadness. I was able to say, this is my mum. This is what she was like, you know.
Also, so sort of talking to a stranger. In fact, it's more than a stranger. It's a stranger you haven't even come across yet.
Yes, completely. And maybe there was something in that, I think, I found over the years, actually, speaking about, you know, grief and mental health, sometimes opening up to people you don't know is sometimes really, really, really beneficial and helped me a lot. So actually, yeah, speaking to strangers helped me in that time, really. And as for the front of them, I mean, they're postcards by Norman Parkinson images. So, you know, fantastic photographer.
Very chic image. The one we're looking at is a woman standing on a town sign, is it?
Yes.
With an umbrella at a jaunty angle.
Yes, and stood on there, all the glamour of the 60s.
Well, that's what she's wearing, a ridiculous sort of poncho dress, which I think most people would look like it was a sack of potatoes, but she's some amazing model, and she makes it look, it's so elegant.
It's like a pop art poncho, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like a Liechtenstein poncho.
You know,
I rather like the town sign is D-I-Z-Y as well.
Yes.
It feels like Dizzy, obviously. And I feel that's not a mistake, is it? That's That was deliberate.
Yeah, that was deliberate. And it's called Dizzy Queen. And yeah, it was taken, in August 1960. And I feel like I've cheated a little with this. Like I say, for me, it was the message and the words. The postcards, actually, of course, I'd come up with this grand plan, was rushing to get to King's Cross and suddenly realised I needed to buy some postcards. And I really fell in love with three designs by Norman Parkinson. This was one of them. And there were three, and they happened to have enough for me to buy, I want to say 70, so I had some spares.
Yes, quite right.
Yes, and I just saw them and I just was immediately, I thought Mum would love these. This is the kind of postcard that I can imagine Mum would love send it to her. So, yeah, really, this is where my love for the postcard project began. And from then, I left many more postcards for strangers, but also started using postcards again, you know, right. from wherever I went.
But it feels to me like, you know, I've read your book, and it's a mixture of being a very touching recollection of your time with your mother, but also it's a description of a slightly wild weekend getting drunk with some friends. So it's a strange mixture of what was going on, but it was a special time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for those months leading up to that trip, I hadn't felt like I'd felt happy. I always think that when you lose someone, you feel guilty when you're laughing, when you're having fun. And I really felt that. And I still feel, I don't mean this to sound too depressing, but I do feel like you feel your happiness is then capped at 90%, 80%, because you can never really fully feel joy without some kind of guilt that they're not here. So I think really for me, it was that weekend was such a turning point for me to be with my friends and to really smile, but also with her in the memory as well.
Brilliant.
And she was the focus of the weekend. So it felt like, yes, we got very drunk and we ate a lot of cheese and we had a really good giggle, but it was all surrounded by this message for her. So I think that really made it. And it was a turning point for me hugely. And became a huge part of my life. Really.
And she had pointed you towards it in a strange way, because you had those tickets on the Eurostar. So this wasn't an alien idea. This is an idea that tied in with what she appreciated and understood and knew that you liked.
Absolutely. And also, so I knew, so I had I'm going to try not to get emotional. I had a very difficult conversation with her, the only one that really acknowledged what was happening in those 2 weeks that she was passing away. And I said, would you be able to write something in case I have children in the future, or something that I could kind of keep? And she said, I can't do that. I just can't. And I trust you and your way of words to tell people about me. And so it was that moment that I guess I had that in my mind, that I knew I would want to write about her in some way. And I think this then, I thought I will write a blog about this adventure, and that would, you know, help me in terms of being able to write about her.
Yes.
And the journey of it all. Yeah.
And maybe there's some truth in the whole process there as well, because actually it's our job to remember people who've gone, who've died, you know.
Yeah.
So And you made it your job, and you made a good job of it. So, you know, you turned it into a positive, which is a very, noble thing to have done.
Yeah, I think I feel terrible, obviously, now for even asking that question. But she understood, and she...
No, it's a conversation.
She told me. So I feel like this was very much all centred around, guided by her gifts and her words. So, yeah.
And this idea of things going out and being found in a chance way. I was reading the other day, I mean, I'm not looking to shoot down your plan here. You're not the first person to have done this. There was a chap in about 1900 who left postcards on trains in the hope that people would find them. This chap, you may have heard of him, Reginald Bray. He did a lot of very odd things with the post, actually. I mean, he would send turnips to himself. He would put a tag on himself and send himself home via the post. So it makes your activities seem very, very calm and considered, to be honest. But
I want to read about this. This sounds amazing.
But he's an odd character, but he did put cards on trains. I don't know why he did it. Certainly he didn't have a sort of an overriding reason like you did. It was, I think he was trying to test the rules of what would happen with the post, because the post is a very regulated thing. So he'd say, if you're allowed to send a package, maybe I can send a live pig. I mean, to be honest, this is the kind of person you would not want to spend a weekend in Paris with, I don't think.
I admire what he did. Gave it a go, and I would love to read more about his journey.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the photographs I've seen of him, he's surrounded by postcards and looks utterly miserable.
His pig had got lost in the post.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for two pigs, three sheep, and I'm due to be posted on Tuesday.
And when the courier brought it, he didn't even knock on the door. He just left the pig on the driveway. Stuck a card through the letterbox.
I think quite a lot of artists have dealt with the idea of chance, things happening, the chance encounter. And then that's it's always exciting, I think, because you don't know what's going to happen, you know, by definition.
Absolutely. And I think, I guess maybe it's also to be said is that I think anyone reading what I did would think of me as younger than I was at the time. And
really?
I see it as well. I don't even recognise myself when I even read back. I think I lost my mum, and I felt like I turned into, I started calling her mummy again at one point. And I was like, I just felt like I was quite childish, I think, childlike. And it was a bit, I'm a bit of a dreamer anyway, but it was almost like I was back as a 15-year-old,
yeah,
or even younger, wanting some kind of magic to happen, some kind of hope,
yes.
I think. And I think, yeah, that's... When I, like I say, when I read my book, if I ever have a little book, I don't recognise the words. I sound so young, and yeah, I think now I would write it in a different way.
But you can't go back, and that person can't go forward, and it reads well. It reads well. It is what it is. The project is and it's a perfect project in its own way, I think. Really, you know, and it worked for you, didn't it? Although it's entertaining to read about it, and fascinating, and touching, it had a real emotional meaning for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think then what it became beyond that, and being able to do it for other people, and even recently, you know, for Mother's Day, people went off and left postcards on Mother's Day in memory of mums. And I created about 30 people took part, and I've put on my website all of their postcards and stories. So it's really been a great way of people kind of marking the memory of someone, which has been great to be able to offer that idea for people to try.
Yeah. So your bonkers idea that you came up with has turned into something that has real help for lots of people. That can only be a good thing.
Yes. Yeah, I like to think so.
Brilliant, brilliant. Good. Well, Bob...
Hello.
What's the first card on your doormat?
Okay. Oh, God, this is going to sound incredibly superficial after the conversation we've just had with Rachel.
There's room for everything. The postcards cover
church,
all of life. All of life.
I do identify with you looking back at your book and thinking, oh, I seem very young in this, because I did the same. Mine was a travelogue of science fiction conventions that I went to in my 30s. And it came out in 2008 initially. And then it was, I was about 35 when it was published, and it was reissued in 2018. And a bit of me thought, oh, blimey, should I let this actually be reissued? Because when I read it, it was, oh, God, you were an idiot. You were just this horrible, drunken, facile idiot who didn't take anything seriously. But maybe these things should just stand as a kind of snapshot of where you were at the time, I think.
Yeah.
Whether they should or not, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah, you know.
you might as well get used to it, you know.
it is like a diary entry,
exactly.
which kind of ties us in neatly to this postcard, actually.
So what are we looking at? I can see
okay.
the sign of love. I can see blue tack on this one.
I did. This was actually blue tack to my bedroom wall for quite a long time. So this is a postcard of, it is essentially an outdoor education centre. It's an outward bound centre on the edges of the North York Moors. So this is, it's Carlton Outdoor Education Centre in the tiny village of Carlton. And it was basically where Teesside kids would be sent to for a week with their school to appreciate the glories of the outdoors. So basically 30 of you, along with a couple of teachers, would be packed into a minibus. It was a Friday. The changeover was always a Friday. So on a Friday morning, you would turn up for school, be packed into a minibus. And it was, for us, it was probably a 7 or 8 mile journey, but it just felt like we'd gone on this extraordinary adventure. And you spend a week living in dormitories with, I'd say, some of your best mates and indeed some of your worst enemies.
Quite.
As you can imagine, the place for a week is acrid with the smell of flaming hot Monster Munch and juvenile fart smells and anything else that 11-year-old boys make.
You paint a beautiful picture.
Don't I? But for many kids, and for me in particular, I guess this would be the first time that we'd really spent any time away from our families. You know, I'd been to stay at my gran's house on a regular basis. So, you know, been away from my parents before, but always within the bosom of the family. But going to Carlton Camp for a week just felt... It felt like I was entering a different world and kind of taking a small step into an adult world, possibly.
It can be quite ugly, that first trip away, can't it? You discover things about your contemporaries and your peers that you don't...
I certainly did.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, well, Paul Whitehead was sick on his bed on the Sunday morning. I certainly discovered something about my contemporaries and peers and indeed about my teacher. It is. I think it's a curious time of your life when you're a kid. So I was 11. Curiously, I kept a diary. I kept a diary throughout this entire year. So 1984, for a long time, was the only year of my life when I kept a diary every single day. And I was 11 at the start of 1984. I've got it here in front of me. It is, without a doubt, most treasured possession, this diary.
Wonderful.
So I can tell you that we left for Carlton Camp on Friday, the 30th of March, 1984, and we came back on Friday, the 6th of April, 1984. And the postcard that I bought, I undoubtedly just bought this from... I think there was a tuck shop, a trestle table set up in the main hall at the camp, with a few wham bars and double deckers on it. But they were selling postcards as well. So I bought this postcard. It is simply a picture of the camp itself taken across a field. I absolutely had no intention of ever writing this card. It's completely unwritten. No intention of ever sending it to anybody, but simply brought it back as a keepsake of that time. And I think it's an interesting time. For me, that was a matter of weeks. I mean, we're talking April here, and in the July, we all left our primary school. It was our final year at primary school because we were 11. And I don't know if that was even part of the reason why I kept a diary every day for a full year, just to kind of document what I knew would be quite a turbulent year in my life. I think that is a big thing for an 11-year-old, to make that jump from primary school to secondary school. You go from being the biggest fish in the pond to being an absolute tiddler of no consequence to anybody. and the summer holiday in between those two things has a real kind of poignancy to it as well, and a feeling of dread. I just remember a feeling of impending doom. Completely. But I have to say, those last few months at primary school, Levendale Primary School in Yarm, were like a summer holiday. And I think even though we, you know, all rolled into one, and even though that we knew we were leaving soon, there was a real kind of, and maybe because we knew we were leaving soon, there was a real kind of camaraderie between us all. And without a doubt, some of the best friends I've ever had in my life were part of that group that went to Carlton Camp in March and April 1984.
I think I can imagine having been, a lot of us went on similar things.
Yeah.
And I can imagine buying the card. What I'm having trouble imagining is having that blue tack to my wall many years later. Why did you keep hold of it?
I genuinely think I was always sentimental and always nostalgic, right, even while I was still a kid.
Right.
It's an interesting thing. I remember being 17. So only, this is 6 years later, and really trying to remember what I'd done every day in 1984 and to kind of embed, because the diary was written in the knowledge that my mum and dad might sneak a look at it at some point.
Right.
So there were bits left out of it. But I think 6 years later, I went back and tried to remember the stuff that I'd left out of the diary. So even, as a teenager, I had that kind of nostalgia for my earlier days. And I think that there's another kind of level of poignancy here in the... my best friend at the time, and without a doubt one of the best friends I've ever had in my life, was a lad called Doug Simpson, who for a year, from the end of 1983 to the end of 1984, really, and a bit beyond, we were just inseparable. We lived maybe a quarter of a mile apart from each other, and we can barely have gone a day in that year without spending time with each other, going on adventures around Yarm, exploring the woods and the fields. Just an extraordinarily close friendship. And that was possibly at its peak around the time that we went to Carlton Camp. All of my photos, I took a little camera with me, and they've all got Doug in them. Doug had spent part of his childhood in Australia, and he moved back there in 1985 with his family. So I completely lost Doug then. And, in an era when you just didn't, you didn't keep in touch with friends that moved away as a rule. Once people left your school, that was it. They were gone. So I didn't have any contact with Doug for decades. And then he suddenly popped up at my house in 1996.
Goodness.
12 years after I'd last seen him, I got a phone call out of the blue saying, "I'm back in Yarm, mate. Do you want to go for a pint?" He'd gone native. So that was lovely. And then lost touch again. And then we just started to make contact again in around 2007, 2008. When I'm very sad to say that Doug died at the age of... I know. He would have been 36, I think, coming up to his 36th birthday. And it really, really hit me hard, enormously so. I still feel an incredible sense of loss about it and a sense of regret that I didn't make more of an effort during, the intervening years to keep in touch with him. So I think when I look back at 1984 now, and this postcard and the diary and all of the stuff that we did during that week, Doug is at the heart of all of it. So it's kind of a way of remembering him as well.
Goodness. And if someone looked at that card without having had this conversation, none of that would be there. Isn't that strange?
It's not written, absolutely. It is literally...
It's you bring to it.
It's a postcard of an outdoor education centre on the North York Moors with nothing written on the back and a couple of faded blue tack marks. But totally, I have very little from that era because, again, it was just, we didn't keep stuff particularly. Mm. I did in my later teenage years. I got quite a lot of stuff from my later... teens, but at the age of 11, stuff was kind of disposable. So I was devastated earlier this year. The only physical object that Doug ever gave me, that I ever remember him giving me, was something he brought back from holiday once, and it was just a little it was like a touristy, like a little glass that said property of Exmoor Prison, please return. That kind. He'd been on holiday there, and he just brought me that back, and I kept that for 30 years plus, 35 years, and I bloody dropped it earlier in the year. I was just shifting stuff around in the kitchen cupboard and dropped it, and it smashed. And I was it was like I'd lost him again. That was my only kind of physical reminder, something that I knew that he'd touched. And it was gone, so I've still got all the broken shards of glass. I just put them into a lump of tissue paper and kept them in a mug. So, it's still...
You really do have sentimental attachment to these things.
I
think I'm a bit of a hoarder, but I think you've got a very precise way of dealing with these things. I'm impressed.
Do you know what? I always get... There's a wonderful film called Stand By Me, a Rob Reiner film with River Phoenix and Will Wheaton. And it's, about a bunch of 11-year-olds basically enjoying their last summer together, going on adventure down the railway line. And it's framed with a narrative by Richard Dreyfuss, who plays the grown-up version of Will Wheaton's character. And he's become a writer at the end of the film. And the last line of the film is, I don't think I ever had friends again like I did when I was 11 years old. Jesus, does anyone? Yeah, and it's getting to be now. I can't watch that bit without... it destroys me. Because I think
There's truth in that.
I think there's so much truth in that. I think there is. I really think there is.
Very good. Well, look, thank you for unpacking, shaking the meaning out of that card, because I thought this isn't very promising, but there's... My goodness.
Oh, you didn't see where that was going, did you?
No. I should never have underestimated you, Bob.
It's a week that... I mean, I can remember so many details of that week, the ghost stories that fly around when you've got 30 kids in a dormitory together. The grey lady that haunted Carlton Camp, which, as a friend of mine pointed out, it's always a grey lady, isn't it? Yeah, it's never
the
purple
worst.
Lady.
The worst.
It's never a dark blue lady. So all of this stuff is just kind of packed into that.
Rachel,
memories of that week and that card.
Did you have an age 11 kind of trip away that is formative for you?
I'm trying to have a think. I definitely went to Brownie Camp. I certainly
make one up. Make one up.
Yeah, I didn't watch. I didn't watch an 18 film on my.
So you weren't taken to see Saturday
Night
Fever.
That's for sure. Yeah, no, gutted. We just had to run around playing rounders. Oh, very disappointing. Nothing mad happened there. But I was just thinking, actually, Bob. I was going to say, have you been back there recently?
Not recently. Curiously, I have actually been back there. Do you know what? Again, this might have been part of the process, because I did it shortly after Doug died.
Right.
2009, I unearthed my 1984 diary and decided to blog it every day, exactly 25 years on. So 25 years on from the original diary entry, I would put that diary entry on my blog and then kind of pick it apart and add the memories that I could embellish it with. So I did that every day throughout 2009. So as part of that strange project, which I purely did for kind of my own entertainment and or exorcism, delete as applicable, I did make contact with lots of places and people that I'd encountered in 1984, including, you know, the teacher that took us to Carlton Camp, Mr. Hurst, who was just wonderful. And I think I did go back. I've certainly been back there a couple of times since then, but I think that was the first time that I went back for a look around. And then I've got a friend who's a teacher and was there with his school. He allowed me to come and have a little look around one day as well. And do you know, the thing that really hit me, the thing that absolutely transported me, and I'd completely forgotten about this, there's a drying room at Carlton Camp where basically you hang up your wet cagoules.
You've got to find your romance where you can.
Yeah, exactly, yes. You hang up your wet cagoules after you've been yomping around the moors and falling in ponds for them to dry. And when I walked into that in 2009 and the smell of 30 damp cagoules hit me, I nearly took my eyebrows off. It was extraordinary. But
I'm not going to bother reading Proust. I don't need that.
Yes.
I've got Bob's drying room.
I don't want my Proustian biscuit would be a mint Viscount. I walked into that and I was just transported back to 1984. The smell
Brilliant.
Was so evocative. I probably hadn't smelt that smell since. So, yeah, I have been back and I did find it incredibly overpowering in many different ways.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing Carlton Outdoor Education Centre with us.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Podcasts from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. And my guests today are writers Rachel Chadwick and Bob Fisher. So, Rachel, what's the second card you've got for us today?
Okay, well, I have obviously many postcards to go through, so I wanted to choose something a little bit different. I've got many that have been received over the last few years, but this one stood out to me. It was a time, October 2015, I decided to take a month completely offline. So I...
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I don't know why I really wanted to do it. Maybe I feel like I'm quite old, but really I'm on the cusp of, you know, social media. I appreciate it. It's been part of my life for many years now, but I also didn't have a mobile phone until I was a lot older. And I think I was just fascinated, you know, with writing and postcards and sending letters. And I thought, right, I'm going to challenge myself and do a whole month offline to do a writing project. So I hid, actually my housemate at the time took my MacBook and my phone as well, my mobile phone, and I just decided to do a whole month. And
this
I got
cold turkey.
I went completely cold turkey, and for that month it was absolutely fascinating. And as so many postcards were exchanged saying, meet you here on this date in the pub. This is the place. If you're not there in 30 minutes, I'm off.
Yes, proper arrangements.
It was amazing. And then I lived in King's Cross at the time, and there was a local shop, and I got to know them really well, and they put a sign in the window because they knew they were doing it. And they said, Rachel, there's something in here for you. So they said they had a lot of people going in saying that they were Rachel. I went in.
There's always one.
There's always one. There were several. And I went in, and the woman who owns the shop had lent me her old camera that you put film in, which I, yes, you know, I had growing up. So it just became this wonderful month. I was asking people for directions. Yeah. I was getting lost, even in London, when I thought I knew the way. But of course, you get so used to looking on your phone and, you know, the maps. So I really kind of started to look up, basically. And this postcard that was sent to me, actually, it's something that I would never do is send one from the internet. I like the finding a postcard and writing
it.
But
this is one of those apps, isn't it, where you can upload an image and they send it from somewhere, a sort of third location.
So for
it's
me,
not, it's
yes.
not printed abroad, it's printed local to you.
Somewhere.
Relative.
But there was a sense of irony in this that I had really wanted to this month to be full of handwritten notes. But of course, my friend who lived in Brunei, who I was in regular contact with, completely panicked and had no way of kind of reaching out and getting in touch. So went online, and she loves data. She's a geography teacher, and had sent me a postcard telling me stats about mobile phone access. And, you know,
the ironies of bouncing around here.
Yeah, I found it hilarious when I received it. And it was just amazing, really, the whole, that she had chosen to do this. It was the only option that she had to send me a communication that far away during that month. There was no other way she could she could get in touch. And it just really reinforced my love for writing postcards, which I did all of that month, and kind of regular communication in that way from there. So I've always written letters now since. But this
It did change you?
It did, completely, yeah. But I think it was just, I found this postcard fascinating because it was the only one of its kind. The rest are all, they were, you know, bought in London shops and sent to me kind of immediately. And so they would come the next day. And this one, she'd spent so much effort. And she just said she just wanted to send me one thing that month that she knew that would get there in that time. So I just, yeah, I just found it all just such an incredibly interesting experience. And I, you know, I met strangers. I, you know, I kind of, it was a bit more adventurous with where I was exploring and what I was doing, but really it just reminded me of the power of communicating via post, really.
But were you working during this month?
I
did you take a month off?
I took the month off to do the writing project because I couldn't work. So of course my work were very
persuading your colleagues not to email you could be quite
I know. Well, actually, my colleagues did send me postcards saying, can you hurry up and come back now? this is getting silly. But
You missed the meeting at 3 o'clock.
Yeah. Three days ago. And then I also found postcards that I used to draw maps on. So because I had so many postcards, I would draw maps on of where I was going that night so I could find my way around. So these, I've actually got a whole collection of postcards from that month, which are just completely, there's some I've written notes on to remind myself about things and directions and then meetings.
So you just have them in your pocket?
Yeah, I just have them with me.
Very good.
They kind of were leading me
like
around.
Prompt cards or something?
Prompt cards, exactly. Yes.
Very good. And when the thing ended, when this project, this self-imposed monastic life ended, did you sort of go bonkers and go online 48 hours non-stop or something?
No, I had a really horrible first week because I thought, I just don't want, you know, I don't want to go back on now. I honestly found it so...
You must have had a full inbox.
I said you had 2,500 emails.
I did. Yes. It actually was very overwhelming. And I thought, what have I done? I should have done 1 week or two. But I took me a while. But I made changes in my life. You know, I didn't re-upload some of those apps. I thought about it a bit more and I promised myself I would take offline time more often and that I would write to people and send postcards, and it really set a precedent for my friendship group as well. We then started communicating more in that way rather than just sending a, you know, a WhatsApp message, which was really lovely.
Right, Bob, well, we're putting you under the microscope now. It's your chance for your last postcard.
Yeah. Okay, this is a little
bit something mysterious, isn't it?
It is. This is a family mystery. A one that was only really brought to light over the last few years. When I was a kid in the 70s and 80s, I was very close to my gran that I mentioned before. I used to go and stay with every weekend. She was my mum's mum, and she was called Mary, and she lived in a bungalow in Middlesbrough. But she wasn't originally from Middlesbrough. And this I kind of knew, because she would mention from time to time that she'd been born in the East End of London. She was born in 1909.
Wow.
So she would talk about that a little bit to me, but not in any great detail. And obviously me being a kid at the time, you know, you've got your own distractions really, haven't you? Which I feel terrible about. I mean, God, if you said to me now, you can have one day of listening to your gran telling you stories about growing up in London in the Edwardian era. Like, my God, I would snap your hand off. But at the time, well, oh, gran's talking about the old days again, but swap shop's on the telly. It went over my head a little bit, but I was incredibly close to my gran. She died in 1989 when I was 16. And still not having really talked that much about her early years in London. But it's only a few years ago. It would be 6 years ago. My auntie Norma, who's my mum's sister, my gran's other daughter, obviously, suddenly produced this book that I'd never heard of or seen before. My mum says she knew it existed, but she'd never seen it, you know, to any great detail. But my Auntie Norma passed it on to me and my mum, and I've got it in front of me. So this is essentially, it's a little black leather-bound book that was given to my gran in 1924 when she moved from London up to Middlesbrough. And it is full of the most absolutely touching messages, drawings from her London family. Yeah. Most of them are from a chap called, to her, he was always Mr. Richards, apparently, but his name was Fred Richards, and he was her stepfather. So basically, my gran was the daughter of, her real father was a Swedish dock worker who we've discovered. My uncle Trevor has done the family tree over the last 10 years. We've discovered that he died. Her father died, certainly on his death certificate, is death by drowning. So we're assuming that he died at work and drowned in the Thames. And my gran's mum remarried a year later to Mr. Richards, to Fred Richards, who, you know, judging by the contents of this book, they had an incredibly close and loving relationship, Mr. Richards and my gran. And judging by the postcard as well that was included within the book. Now, this is the postcard that I've picked out. As far as we know...
So just for the listeners, it's what we call a real photographic postcard. So it's a photograph of which there would be... They would have printed up half a dozen at the most.
Yeah,
it's never a commercially available thing, but it is a postcard on the back.
I'm glad you knew that, because I genuinely had no idea how this would have come about. It is a postcard with a picture of, as far as we know, Mr. Richards himself on it. It's a very kind of staid looking chap in a suit and tie. And there's a credit for the photographic studio on the back of the postcard as well. So that's what would have happened. He would have gone into a photographic studio, got his picture taken, and then got a small number of postcards pressed up.
Exactly. They could print them on ordinary paper, or they could print them on postcard stock.
Right. Okay.
And obviously, postcard stock was popular because it's a nice size, but also you had the option, if you wanted, of sending them.
Right, so this, as far as I can see, this was never actually sent, because there's no stamp on it, although there is a date mark on it, which is the 9th of January.
They rarely were sent,
really. Right, yeah.
That's probably in the studio, isn't it, that day?
I would say, was that the day it was pressed up for him?
It looks like it.
9th of January, 1924. And on the back of it, Mr. Richards has written, "To Mary," which was my gran's name, "with love and the best from F. Richards, and three kisses after it." And I'd say this was tucked inside the book. I'm going to read you this. This was inside, this is written in the book, again from F. Richards. This is dated a little bit earlier. This is the 13th of November, 1923. We don't know exactly when my gran left London for Teesside, but it was certainly... You know, it was around that time. "Go happy your way, dear, and with joy in your heart. Forget all the sadness it brought you to part. Forget all your worries and things that were bad. Just remember those sweet, happy days we have had. Then picture the future that's bound to be bright. Try and think that your goal is already in sight. Though it's soon we shall be by the sea set apart, yet we're right close together in each other's hearts. Just think of your own little boy left behind, praying for you, and if heaven be kind, all your scheming and wishing and hopes will come true. For there's nothing I wish more than all this for you." Mm-hmm. Okay. So
beautiful.
Is that a personal poem, or do you think that's just an autograph book, formulaic poem?
I have tried to find, I've tried to Google pretty much every separate line from this poem, and brought up nothing. I'm assuming that Fred Richards wrote it himself for my grandmother. He certainly seems to have been quite an artistic chap, because there are really good drawings in the book as well that he's signed. There's a drawing of a sailing boat and of a couple ballroom dancing. But, I mean, the the most poignant part of this, A, we have no real idea why my gran came to Teesside. Other, you know, aged 14, you know, even in 1924, young, I think, that was young to be leaving your entire family behind. Yeah. We vaguely know she, like, her family had some agreement with a family on Teesside that in an emergency she should come up here. But we don't know what the connection between the two families was or indeed what the emergency was. All I do know is that my gran's mother, so Mr. Richards' wife, died herself in September 1923. So whether Mr. Richards decided he wasn't capable of looking after a 14-year-old girl and that she should finally move up to Teesside, we don't know. Whether, I mean, there is that cryptic line in the poem that he wrote about a little boy left behind.
Yes.
We think it's unlikely that my gran, had a baby at the age of 13, 14. But that line is so
It's
strange.
Not him, though, is it? Because he's her dad. Or stepdad. He's not a
he's
little
He's a stepdad,
boy.
Yeah.
And he's a grown-up chap. He's not
Oh, totally.
Boy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think he's referring to himself. My gran had brothers, but they were all older than her. So I genuinely... That bit is a complete mystery. But what we're fairly certain of, as far as we know, is that after 1924, she never had any contact with her London family ever again.
Really?
And that is the family mystery. We do not know why. Do you know, I would be genuinely intrigued to hear from anybody who kind of might think they were related to Mary Frederickson, who grew up in Poplar and Bow in East London from 1909 to 1924. But to me, I mean, all of this is... Because I was so close to my gran, but I loved her so much, but I didn't know any of this. So all of this it feels like I'm getting to know her sort of retrospectively and sadly posthumously. But I really would like
also
to find
an irony
out more
in
about
that,
her.
The complexities of life, sometimes are the things people don't want to talk about, because that's if they've run away to the other end of Britain.
Yeah. That's,
so in a way, perhaps you were destined not to know because at that time, because she wouldn't have wanted to talk about it, or she would have.
Yeah, no, I don't think she would have. If there'd been some incredible like family secret, I don't think she would have told me at the age of 7. But none of the other family members knew about it either. So
amazing.
It just remains this. I like a mystery. I like an enigma. And I must admit, there is a little part of me that maybe thinks I should leave it where it is and just kind of, my memories of my gran are what they are. And she was wonderful. And maybe that's enough for me. But, again, the detective part of me thinks, well, I wonder what we could find out here.
Well, we'll leave Fred Richards there with all the questions that he's posing to us. And as yet unanswered. Well, look, thank you so much, both of you, for sharing the cards with me and the listeners today. I always say the same thing. I never know where the cards will send us. And today, actually, they've had quite an elegiac, quite a reflective feel, but it's been really fun hearing about them as well, I must say, certainly for me. A reminder for everyone at home, there will be images of all these cards, including the mysterious message from Fred Richards, on the blog postcardfromthepast.co.uk. Now, before we let Bob and Rachel log off and bake some banana sandwiches or make a sourdough trifle, I've got one more postcard for you both. So if you turn to the final page of your dope sheet, it's become a habit of ours to end the show with one of these. So, Rachel, perhaps you could describe for us this... vision in front of you. Can you see it?
What a dapper young chap.
Yes.
With a gorgeous grey suit and a delightful pocket square and tie, maroon and polka dot.
I rather like maroon silk. It looks rather pretty, doesn't it?
Yeah, it looks gorgeous. I want you to tell me more about this.
Well, regular listeners will be aware. This is... an oversized postcard, and you can probably see it's got a sort of circle on it. I don't know if it's come up on the image. Mm.
Yes.
It's a record. It's a postcard record. So this is made, I think, in Hungary. But I think it's a German film star, perhaps,
okay,
or a pop star. And I have his name. This is Stefan Reuter. Reuter as in the news agency.
Hmm.
Now, because we're not sitting opposite each other in the studio, I've done a bit of preparation, and young Tom, back at Water Studios, has made a digital file of this. So if we listen very carefully, he should be able to play what Stefan Reuter sounds like. There we go. There's your hauntology.
Oh, he's got a whiff of the kind of Bobbies about him, hasn't he? There's a bit of, yeah, Bobby Vinton or Bobby V about him.
You're absolutely right. I think I'm looking for a date. I don't think there's a date on it.
It's got to be late 50s or early 60s.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. The song is called Welt in der Ferne. Fight in the Ferne? I can't quite read it. But I always say the same thing. It's not bad for a piece of cardboard.
Yes.
No.
I've got second-hand records that sound worse than that. That I've paid a lot of money for.
And it's definitely better than the flexi discs you used to get on the front of magazines and music papers.
Yes, and it kind of is one, but even thinner and laminated onto
card. Wow.
But there's a shiny laminate on it.
Yeah.
And the grooves are in the laminate.
Wow.
Well, as the charming Stefan Reuter continues to rotate at exactly 45 revolutions per minute, that's it for this time on Podcast from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first-class guests for sharing the postcards from their pasts, Bob Fisher and Rachel Chadwick. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me, at Past Postcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardourstudios.co.uk.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.